96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
You know, if there are people out there that are in a what we call sometimes a dark place, or they think they need help, they need to reach out and call. But if you're feeling, you know, not quite right, and if there are things going on in your life that you need assistance with, you need to reach out and call somebody.
That is Cleveland, Ohio Police Chief Calvin Williams today during his discussion about the suicide of Stephen Stevens, also known as the Facebook killer. He mentioned mental health as one of the possible issues behind the horrible events of last Easter Sunday. Before Stevens took his own life, he live-streamed the murder of 74-year-old Robert Godwin on Facebook Live. He also spoke of a laundry list of personal problems that he blamed for why he committed the crime. Well, tonight we take a look at the terrible toll that suicide takes, not only for those who have committed it, but the issues before and after it's done. My guests are clinical psychologist Dr. Nicole Cutts and Lisa Daughtry. She's the mother of Ian Daughtry, who committed suicide 6 years ago at the age of 18. If you have a question or if you have a comment about this extremely important and difficult issue, we invite you to call us at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can certainly follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or Daily Drum WHUR. As always, Lisa has been here before, and I thank you again for coming in to discuss this really difficult and delicate issue. So I always appreciate you coming in and talking with
thank
us.
Thank you, Alan.
And Dr. Cutts, let me start with you. Difficult week as it relates to the so-called Facebook killer, committing suicide today before doing so, killing an innocent man on the street. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what possibly could have been happening, the mental health stresses that he may have been under, blaming a girlfriend, gambling problems, saying no one is paying attention to me before committing this crime. What does that say to you?
Well, you know, I saw the video of Mr. Stevens talking about, you know, how he felt. And definitely he was not well, you know, mentally, psychologically, spiritually. He wasn't well. And he sounds like he was under a lot of pressures, and that his thinking was, it didn't make sense, you know, because he jumped from, you know, I help people, but nobody cares about me, to therefore innocent people are going to die. You know, that's the part at which, you know, it becomes diagnosable mental illness. It's not unusual for people to feel as if people don't care about them, or to feel hopeless or to feel down, but that leap that he made between that and now other people have to die, you know, says that he was clearly sick.
Talk to me about that leap, because he does not fit any stereotypical profile of a troubled or criminal mind. He had no run-ins with police. He had a good job, educated.
Yeah.
And apparently had a whole host of friends and frat brothers. Mm-hmm. And yet, as you just suggested, he made a leap from helping people to feeling the pressure of the things that are going on with him to being a homicidal maniac. What happened? Is there a snap that happens, or is this something that built up over a period of time?
Most likely it's something that built up over a period of time, and there can be one or two or more events that can act as a trigger that's that snap that you're talking about. You know, somebody there's no way that this is the first time that he's felt the feelings that he expressed, but I think that most likely, without having, you know, spoken to the man, he reached a boiling point with those thoughts that were in his head, and that he didn't get help for the way he was feeling. He didn't see them as irrational to go from, you know, first of all, I'm sure it's not true that no one cared about him. That is just the way he felt. And, you know, people can feel that way. But that leap to now I'm going to kill people. So he was very angry. Obviously, he was feeling despondent. He was desperate. And I didn't hear him express hopelessness, but, you know, you have to be at a very hopeless state to take your own life.
Lisa, talk to me about Ian. We've discussed him on this program before. Mm-hmm. 18 years old, high school senior, full of life and promise. But then he took his own life. It's been 6 years, seven
Almost.
Years?
It's going on five next month.
And as you've, you know, thought about, you know, the loss of your son, what comes to mind now when you think about the dilemma of suicide and mental illness?
I mean, of course, I've worked with the American Foundation Suicide Prevention. I was a board member. And as far as being an advocate for suicide prevention and mental health, for me, and why I'm still on this path with talking about it, is because our community, Afro-American, we still are a little bit apprehensive as far as discussing it publicly.
Maybe a lot.
Yeah, very much. And I sort of had to, like I said, I filter my social media for the last couple of days because of the fact that my own community, my far as Afro-American friends, and just watching what the comments about, it's a sensitive matter because when we're, it's almost like we're making fun of it. And that's what I noticed on the news feed for social media. We were heartfelt for Elder Goodwin, and I was too. However, when it came to Stephen, people were like, just go ahead and kill yourself.
Yeah.
And it just was rubbing me the wrong way. Not saying he caused, he basically, it's a murder-suicide. However, this man was suffering, and no one, I don't think, ever heard or listened to what he had to say or even was paying attention to anything that maybe showed his behavior or something was off with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one could possibly argue that he did not say anything. We don't know that. But then there could very well have been, you know, signs that he was going down this path, which, and we've discussed this before, particularly with Ian. At the time, you said that when he was alive, you didn't know.
Well, I knew, like any other teenager, there, you know, you have your depression, those levels. However, I think what triggered him was me being a single mom, you know, basically career 9 to 5 and then a mother. His father was not a part of his life. And when his father did initiate something, it wasn't even something personal. It was basically business. So that triggered him because he already had questions about why aren't you around? You know, I held an open door policy for him to come around anytime. But when you do, it's almost like you don't understand his feelings. He's been neglected for 18 years. And to watch his mother basically be the head of the household, the provider, the protector, the nurturer, he didn't see that male figure. And it wasn't like he couldn't have it, but his father just didn't take fatherhood seriously.
But some could argue, you know, the picture that you just painted, mm-hmm. you know, single mom, 9 to 5, father not in the picture, that is not unusual. So is this more about how individuals may internalize problems as opposed to something that is very common?
Let me be the devil advocate, because I feel like we used to be where it was a village that took care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have also looked at people complaining, having issues as far as, you know, I'm tired of that vibe. I'm tired of hearing this person talk. And so we sort of disconnect ourselves from, you know, having that connection, that closeness with a person. Just saying, hey, how are you doing? You know, what's going on? It's been about my business. It's about what's going on in my house. What am I doing for me and my family? It's not about, you know, Barbara down the street, I haven't seen her, you know, or she's been a little bit closed in. It's not that anymore. I notice people, like, you hear a lot of people say, I'm tired of people complaining, you know, yada. But at the same time, how are you now, all of a sudden you feel sad and your heart is full because this person took their lives and you said, I could have helped.
Mm-hmm.
But you ignored maybe the change, the shift in a person.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about suicide tonight, and not only what happens to those who have committed it, but also the impact that it has on those that it leaves behind. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Let's go to Tyrone, calling from Waldorf. Tyrone, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Fisher. How y'all? Oh, good afternoon, panel, Mr. Fisher.
Doing just fine. Go right ahead.
You know, I'm going to tell you, and I didn't realize that because of my line of work, they require us to, I'm pretty high up there now, so they require us to take some psych courses. Never thought that it would be anything worth it. You know, I'm not going to even lie to you. I was like, whatever. Most psychologists, they're probably just stay there and steal people money, yada, yada, yada. You know, that ignorant way of thinking. So in a situation that happened just recently, I'm not going to put the person's name out there because, you know, anonymity, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked, Mr. Fisher. I was able to talk that person down. I mean, I actually got down to their level. And you know what that person actually told me?
What's that?
I wanted somebody was just to have a conversation with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I didn't know how to reach out. So my question to your panel and to you is that when you have somebody who don't know how to reach out, even though you're reaching out to them and they don't know how to reach out, you can't force them. Because what I'm hearing, if you force them, you're going to really run them away.
That's an excellent question. Let me see what.
So if I try to commit you, I don't know what to do. So I have to actually literally come down to your level completely.
Yeah. Let me see what Dr. Cutts has to say about that. Thank you so much, Tyrone. How do you reach out to someone whom you suspect is struggling with depression, mental health issues, withdrawal, Dr. Cutts?
Well, the caller had a good point. You cannot force people, but I think that Lisa also had a great point, too, taking time to pay attention to what's going on with other people and slowing down a bit. It could just be as simple as saying, you know, I'm a little worried about you. Your mood seems to have changed lately. Is there something going on? Would you like to talk about it? And if it seems very severe and they say, yes, something is going on and I don't want to talk about it, it's personal, you could just ask them, you know, have you thought about talking to a professional or getting any kind of counseling. Now, that person might say, no, I don't need counseling, and run away. But another person might also say, you know, thanks for showing some concern, might talk to you and might go. So there's no formula, you know, but I think that an honest reaching out cannot do any harm.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about a suicide and mental health. Quickly, Cookie, calling from Manassas. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you so much for having this important show.
Sure.
I just want to share an experience because recently I lost my ex-husband to suicide. It was over the holidays, actually. And it's been years since we were together. But, you know, when I found out about what happened, there's not a day that goes by that, you know, that something just, I'm just perplexed. And I'm a mental health care professional myself. I'm a counselor. And with that being said, you know, I think I question about all the people that were around him. Did you see any signs? Those sorts of things. What was missed? And my thoughts are like, you never think that you'd be dealing with this personally yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is to the panelists, what is something that you can do to cope with this after it's happened? That's the hard part about suicide, all the questions that happen when the person is gone.
I'm going to allow them to take a stab at that question after the break. I've got to take a quick break, so Cookie, please stay with us. Also, Nyla calling from D.C. Christian calling from Middleburg, Virginia. Daphne also calling from Maryland. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Lines are still open. We'll still take your phone calls as we continue this conversation about suicide and mental health. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. Stay with us.